Adam Silver, you are under surveillance. I am watching you every single move that you make. Please know that we better be getting a generational whistle in game three or it's on. I know that you hate Philadelphia. I know you hate the Sixers. I know you hate the process, but
I like this because you kind of look like Prison Mike from early episodes of The Office with your tinfoil hat. Like, yeah.
Great. A millennial television reference already.
But, yeah.
We're hitting all the bases right now.
We're checking boxes.
So yeah. Stay woke. The Sixers got fucked, but stay tuned. This was a minor setback for a major comeback, to quote Tyrese Maxey and his live, laugh, love motivational quotes that he loves to say.
Here's what I was thinking, though, while I was watching. You know, obviously, like, Maxey gets held on that inbounds. But at least, like, that there wasn't, like, a parallel to another, like, very bad Philadelphia sports loss hold with that play. That would have been too much to bear.
Where they were on the other end of...
Yeah.
Where the foul actually was called, and it was, you know, kind of maybe could have went either way. Mm-hmm. In a major game, I can't imagine something like that happening. And many people have been asking me, on a scale of 1 to New York deserved 9/11, how mad are you? And right now, I would say probably, like, I don't know, maybe like a 5. Last night I was more distraught than upset over this game. I honestly was just, like I said, in complete shock that it actually happened. But I don't know what to say anymore. It's like a CIA. It's like they're designed to torture the fans. Like,
I love the tinfoil hat with this, by the way. Anyone who's listening on audio, you're missing a lot by not watching a YouTube of this, of Trill and his tinfoil hat he's quickly made, talking about the CIA's impact on this Philadelphia 76ers fan base.
It's like every time I think that there is something that couldn't happen that would make me more further removed from the team emotionally, it's just another thing on top of what it's like. Okay. We really, like, obviously people ask me, like, where this ranks amongst the Sixers losses in terms of, like, especially during the Embiid era, like, how bad was this one? I mean, this was up there. The reason why the Raptors and the Celtics losses aren't, they don't sting quite as much to me, even though, like, the Kawhi shot was obviously devastating. Game 6 last year against the Celtics was heartbreaking when they just couldn't hit a fucking shot down the stretch of that game and could have easily won and went to the Eastern Conference Finals, all that shit. The reason why it's harder to lose the Knicks and the Hawks games to me is because I do genuinely feel like the Sixers are the more talented team. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily the better team, because I think that the Knicks 3 through 10 is just way better than the Sixers 3 through 10. Like, I think, obviously, Brunson has been absolute dog shit in this series. He is shooting like 26% from the field, and the Knicks have beat them on pure hustle plays. And like I said, it's pure hustle. It's, you know, look, a little bit of the reffing, sure, but, like, that happens. You can't control that. And then it's just very, like, bullshit. Josh Hart makes 4 3.5 after not making 4 3s in a single game all year. In the first 2 games of the series, he's made 4 3s in both games. There's just certain things that you can't really get too worked up about. But at this point, it's like Joel looks like a shell of himself. Like, he could barely run up and down the court last night, especially in the second half when he was looking more gassed. And that's a, you know, that's part of the, you know, one of his major flaws is that he's never been able to, you know, obviously avoid injury to the point where he can stay in shape. And then physically, he just is not the same guy. And having said all that, during the Joel and Maxey minutes in this series, they have been winning them, and they should be. It's just when one of those guys is off the court that they're not able to sustain any sort of regular offense and any form of just being a normal team. Whereas the Knicks have a ton of depth. The Knicks have a ton of role players that have, like, random games, like Bojan Bogdanovic last night, where he just hits major threes. They have, you know, guys that are going to beat you on the margins. They're going to beat you on the boards. They're going to get to loose balls. And the Sixers right now, it felt like this Sixers team made sense around Joel. And I think when he was playing at his peak in January, they made a lot more sense. Now that he is not physically the same, even with Maxey playing some of the best ball of his career, they just don't have enough. Like, they could come back and win this series, even if I think that's a long shot. But they're dead on arrival if they play the Bucks in the second round at this point, especially if Giannis comes back, because they're not going to be able to sustain a month or two of Joel being able to not be, you know, peak Joel. Like, they need December Joel to win series against real good playoff opponents. And, you know, it is unfortunate that it has happened again, but I mean, I've been saying, I think the Knicks are the new Miami Heat. They got some devil magic, dude. Like, they really, like, it's shocking. And we got Caleb Martin again.
Yeah.
He posted the photo of Caleb Martin. Josh Hart has been owning me all series, even though he didn't make any threes in the second half last night. And I'm kind of exhausted. I'm sick of half of the team right now. I feel for Joel more than anything. I was hypercritical of Joel during last year's playoffs. I think he's gutting it out and he's trying his best, but he's just not the same guy. And Maxey, I love Maxey and he's been amazing, but he's not good enough to carry a playoff team in a playoff series. And they're losing the game on the margins on, you know, everything that could possibly go their way goes in the other direction. And I'm just, you know, coming to terms right now. Yeah, that's my spiel. It's basically, you know, it's Jover, but also I've recovered a little bit since last night when I felt like existential loss bad.
I don't want to like pile on with Sixers fans in such a, you know, a tough place, but we're also bearing probably the most upsetting news that came out last weekend, is that you guys are going to lose one of your max players. It seems like Tobias is out the door, which will really set the team back quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the funniest part about last night was having to explain to people who don't regularly watch the Sixers that was a good Tobias game. Like, he went 4 of 11 from the field. And I'm like, yeah, but he tried on the boards and his defense was good. Like, you don't understand. My expectations for Tobias is, don't be the worst player on the court. And Buddy Hield has taken that baton and
he's awful. Dude. Dude, he was jumping up when you hopped off that stream the other night. That was like my takeaway. It was like, holy shit, Buddy Hield is bad. Like, just from that half, like, I watched. Yeah.
I want to give a little bit of the benefit of the doubt to the fact that you know, we never saw Buddy Hield in a playoff setting, so how could you know that he was this bad in a playoff setting?
Right.
But basically, when we came out of that trade, it felt like they got one of the better players at the deadline, because there weren't very many good players outside of OG Anunoby and Siakam traded. But the reality is just, he can't. I basically describe it as like, what if Tobias was smaller and also somehow slower? Like, he doesn't make quick decisions. He can't dribble. Like, it's Dante DiVincenzo gets into his handle and it's like he panics and makes horrible decisions. He doesn't, even though he's like an all-time level shooter, he's not a quick release kind of unconscious, just will shoot like, you know, it's no one's business. He overthinks things a lot. I literally think like the lights are too bright for him in this situation. And everyone was calling me Jim Park on the stream last night, because as anyone who doesn't know who Jim Park is, Jim Park will regularly say that the difference between the Warriors being contenders and being the 10 seed and losing in the play-in is that Trayce Jackson-Davis didn't play enough, which is obviously an absurd statement. But I was saying last night during the stream, I was like, it's not that playing campaign over Buddy Hield would make a difference. It's that campaign can dribble a basketball, and Buddy Hield literally cannot dribble a basketball against a team that can apply ball pressure, and he's missing all his shots, and he's not a good defender. So I'm like, taking him out of the game and replacing him with literally anyone who can dribble a basketball, who can shoot a basketball, is going to be an improvement over whatever he's giving you. He's been the worst player in this series by a mile. But then again, he plays like 10 minutes a game. Like, it really should not be that should not be what's determining whether they're down 0-2 or not. But the margins are so thin on this series so far.
That's what I was just going to say. I mean, we're talking about 2-1 possession games. Like, you know, that's kind of the difference, you know? And I don't know, like, I don't think, like, Nurse, like, has to play this guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you guys have, like, I mean, I agree with you, what you said earlier, that, like, the Knicks are probably deeper, like, 3-10. But it's not like there's just nobody else to play. Like, Campaign is fine. And Campaign's, like, actually been in big games and, like, done some of this stuff. You know, you have Nick Batum, you have these other guys who are, you know, fine. I really think every time Buddy Hield is on the floor, you can't have Buddy and Tobias out there.
No.
Like, I'm sorry. That's just like two guys who are just like terrible. You know what I'm saying? Like, for as much as like Kelly Oubre and Kyle Lowry, like, obviously have their flaws. Like, they are guys who will struggle in the things coming off, huh? Tinfoil hat's coming off. Yeah.
Hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, all my conspiracy theories about the NBA league office right now, we're just heating up under this tin foil hat. Just
cooking your brain a little. But like, those guys, like, I still, like, do things, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just, you can't have two different guys giving you zero, you know what I'm saying? Like, and they're just, Tobias is such a, I think what Tobias and Buddy Hield knows about them is they're just such non-threats that they are, like, completely disregarded, which is like, Buddy Hield, you're supposed to be a shooter. Like, you know what I'm saying?
The only thing you do.
Yeah. Like, what? Yeah. So I don't know. It was, that really jumped out to me though. Like, what in the game, I mostly watched game one. I was extremely sick yesterday and didn't watch much of this game except for box score hunting in like the last 5 minutes. But that jumped out to me, like how bad Buddy Hield was. Like, it was, yeah, nuts.
So Buddy's been the worst player on the court. The Sixers have not been able to take advantage of some of the things that I thought they would be able to just target Bojan Bogdanović defensively and play him off the court. They haven't been able to, you know, he's another guy that is completely dependent on the shot falling, but hey, the shot's been falling for him in big moments for the Knicks so far in this series, and it's really swung these first two games. And like I said, they're winning on the fringes, they're winning on the margins. And the thing about Oubre, my thing with Oubre is, like, Oubre's defense is so important to this team that they kind of can't take him off the court in the same way. And, like, people were mad that Tobias played 41 minutes last night, and I get it, but, like, the other options are, like, everyone is on the wing is just playing terrible right now. Like, you know, Batum's been fine, but he's old and he can't play a lot of minutes every single night anymore. Oubre is been a disaster on offense. I really don't even know what happened to him. He's been kind of, you know, he was our third best player for a large chunk of the season. And that might need to tell you something about the fact that, you know, this team is just really lacks the role players to make up for the fact that when Joel isn't 100%, they're just not going to be able to win against these deeper teams. Like I said, like the best players on the Knicks, the best player on the Knicks is playing like shit, and the Sixers are down 0-2. And it is, it's frustrating. I hope that, you know, they come out and they don't just lay an egg in game three. I hope they at least go out with a fight. Like, there are people that are like, shut down Joel, pun on the season. That's not going to happen, dude. Like, he wants to play. They're going to play him. I'm not even saying I agree with it or not. There's really nothing that, you know, we can say or do. If he wants to play, he's going to play. And I think the fact that this will at least get Maxi some more playoff experience, this will get, you know, the team a better idea of who they should be looking for in this offseason at a minimum, if they can extend this series at all. While Joel's in the locker room and he can't even look at the light, he's wearing sunglasses off because Kelly, I don't know if you saw the clip, but someone posted a clip that Kelly Oubre hit him in the face in game one. And apparently it might have paralyzed, he can't blink with the one eye right now.
Is that what it is? I kind of just assumed he was like perked up beyond all belief.
I thought so too, but he got smacked in the face, and ever since he's been like one eye, which he misses multiple free throws yesterday. He's like, he's just not like I said, like he is. I kind of thought he was on his, you know, Percocet and sunglasses future flow as well, but he is just, he's just a zombie right now. So I'm kind of, you know, there, like I said, there's a lot of things I could complain about. But the only positive I can really take so far from this series is like, yeah, Tyrese Maxey is that dude. Even if he's been hyper effective when the offense is centered around Joel as the DHO hub, he is playing at a level that I think of all the guys that are his age, I think the only one that's playing at his level in this playoffs is Anthony Edwards. And like, I keep putting a ceiling on him and he keeps just kind of proving me wrong. Like, the Knicks have no way to deal with his speed. His playmaking was great yesterday. His defense has been better. He played through illness, and he's been a revelation. Like, I'm kind of shocked at how good he has looked against a team that I think has a great playoff defense. Like, I think the Knicks are really hard to score against. I think that they play really good team defense. They have multiple very good to elite defenders on that team. And outside of the final play of the game yesterday, Maxey was kind of doing whatever he wanted down the stretch, especially that Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey two-man game. So the positives that I can take away from this is Maxey's that dude. They're going to have a lot of things to look at in these next few games and then make some decisions this offseason. But look, the reality is just if Joel is this every playoffs, then the Sixers are not going to do anything. Like, if he's just a corpse for half of the times they make it to the playoffs, it fucking sucks. I feel for the dude. He's pushing through it. He's trying to be a soldier right now. But there are clips coming out where, like, it looks like he can barely run up and down the court. His mobility is, like, completely fucked. And defensively really is where it comes through to me in a way that, like, even when Joel was hurt before, his defense in the playoffs was still amazing. But yesterday they were just able to get pocket pass after pocket pass to Isaiah Hartenstein, and he was able to hit him with little floaters because Joel just couldn't even protect the rim or rebound, because he didn't get any rebounds in the second half. So yeah, I mean, it sucks, it's terrible, but this season does feel like it's kind of cursed. And the next few games will tell a lot about this team, because if they lay an egg and they just kind of lay down flat, I think it's going to be more of the same. And then I think if they fight back in the series and they extend it, if they lose, you can at least take some positives from this.
I would agree. I mean, I feel like people are talking a lot about the Jalen Brunson being bad and how that's not going to continue. That's probably going to continue. That's how the playoffs work. I'm sorry. Like, there's good defenses. Yeah, especially Nick Nurse understands that. So I don't think that's necessarily something that is a, you know, if you're looking at another thing, if you're looking for positives as a Sixers fan, is that they do seem to have figured out how to make Brunson uncomfortable in this series. And I think that, you know, maybe Thibodeau finds out a counterbalance to that here somewhere along the way. But usually that doesn't usually get figured out in a series. And this is kind of one of the reasons why I was so impressed with Brunson last playoffs, is because what's happening now is what I assumed to happen. You know, like, because when you are a small stature guy and you have an entire defense keyed in on you, like, they're going to be, but now it kind of looks like, well, maybe Cleveland just wasn't that good. And Miami was in their all time, like, their weakest team of like the past 20 years. And they were in their all time devil magic bag. So I don't know. Like, I don't think Brunson's bad. I want to be clear about that. I just think it's very difficult. You've got to be a truly superior caliber of player to be totally unimpacted from being the number one thing on the scouting report in playoff defenses and stuff like that.
Especially when they have, like, their second best shot creator is probably Bojan Bogdanovic, or you know, sometimes Deuce McBride.
Yeah,
like last night Deuce McBride had a stretch where I was like, damn, it was one of those moments where it was just like, this is what they're getting. And look, you credit to them for playing, I mean, I hate them all, to be clear, but
lest credit, anyone think,
but credit to them for you know, figuring out some bullshit and having the refs in their pocket and all that stuff, you know. But long story short on this, I'm upset. I'm not as distraught as I was yesterday. To me, the silver lining is that Maxey has looked as good as he has against a great playoff defense. I hope that Joel can get better over the course of this series. I don't really see that happening. I think that he's only going to probably, you know, deteriorate over the course of this series with the way that he's looked in the first few games. I hope I'm wrong. But like I said, I'll get on Joel when it was last year and I felt like he had a chance to seal the series, rewrite the narrative about him, and flip his legacy on his head. And he looked mostly fine last year. This year, I do think physically he's just not the same guy that he's been. This 2022 and this year are the only times that I've been like, he's just not physically capable of doing what he needs to do right now. The other years, I got on his ass and I felt like he needs to be better, because right now he still has an all-star level impact. He doesn't have a superstar level impact right now, especially with the little things like the rebounding and the rim protection and the things that we're used to with him. Even though his passing has gotten much better, his decision making has gotten much better. If the jumper isn't falling for him, it's been a painful process for his scoring in the half court. And like I said, they're still dominating. They have 131 offensive rating when Maxey and Embiid are both on the court. It's just figuring out that other time, and they're running out of time to do it. So hopefully we get game three and, like I said, some generational refereeing on our side, some actual shooting from the role players, and maybe a healthier looking Joel. I'm not super optimistic about it, but you know, it's possible that it could still happen here. It's just, man, that was such a brutal, like, I don't even know how you come back from that loss. Like I said, remember we talked about before the playoffs, I was like, which teams, if you get punched in the mouth, which ones do you think would fold? Yeah. I put the Sixers on that list, and I think that they have to prove to me that they're not just going to fold after that game, because you could easily do that, even though I feel like through two games, they could easily be up 2-0 right now with a few things going in their direction.
Well, that was what I was just going to say. I feel like they already did get punched in the mouth in game one.
That's true. Fold. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. The game one thing, I genuinely think, like I said, they out-hustled them. That game one was, they dominated them on the glass. Like, yeah. I said this before last night. I said it just has to not be a historical amount of discrepancy in the offensive rebounding department. Like, they got out rebounded 23-9 on the offensive glass in the first game. Last night it was a bit more even in the rebounding battle, and they should have won the game. They had opportunities, even with all the bullshit foul calls and all that stuff. They still had a chance to win that game. Maxey could have hit the last shot, and also in addition to that, they could have just got the rebound and not let Hartenstein get it and kick it out to Dante DiVincenzo. But Like I said, they're not out of this series, but historically speaking, a team goes down 0-2, even if the other team, hasn't been dominating them. It's really, really tough to come back from that. And more importantly, I think I kind of look at it like I felt like they needed to steal last night, and they arguably outplayed them until that last 30 seconds. And the fact that they came out of there down 0-2. It's hard to come back from. I know Nurse is like, well, this will just extend the series, and Embiid's like, we're going to come back and win. Like I said, they have to prove it to me, and they still have not proven it to me. The only thing that I've taken from this is that the team needs to be a lot better around Joel and Maxey. Embiid needs to be healthier for these playoff runs. They need to treat him like Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat and play him probably 50 games a year just to keep him in shape for the playoffs. And look, even this year with Jimmy, you know, it didn't work out for them. But and then Maxey is that guy. He could be a 1B on a contending team. And that's way more than I ever anticipated. Like, I was hoping he could be the third best player on a contender. Then I was like, all right, he's clearly the second best. Now I think he can be that guy going back and forth with Joel here. And they need to improve the starting or the supporting cast around them for sure. So hope the Clippers lose, because we might need Paul George. I've pivoted. I've watched way too many shitty players play in the playoffs, and I know Paul George has had some stinkers in the playoffs too. Just get me a guy who's a Hall of Fame level talent, and even if he's old, he's massive, he can shoot, and he's a big body. Like, I think he will age well enough that I could be able to live with them signing him this offseason. If you put Paul George in Tobias or Oubre's spot right now, they would be way, way better off. So we're here. We are here. Unfortunate. that they kind of played the way that they did through these first few games, but series isn't over. We can talk a little bit. Let's just talk a little bit beyond the Sixers Knicks series, which is designed to personally drive me insane. Let's talk a little bit about the Lakers. I know you weren't able to watch last night.
I did. I was sucking up all the crumbs even after I did all my vomiting yesterday. So today was much more like lying in bed resting. So I had plenty of time to look over all of the tweets, look over at all the different angles. We're back in for one of the most competitive sweeps of all time. Part two. So very exciting for Lakers fans. I watched all the reaction cams from different Lakers fans last night. It's a lot of fun. It really is. It's a great treat for me. They kind of blew that game. It sure seems like Jamal Murray, man. I mean, look, he's a great postseason player, but he's got to prove it to me in the regular season.
Dude,
this is great. It's great that he can do this when the lights are brightest, but I need to see him do this on a Wednesday night against Charlotte before I'm ready to call him, a good player.
Well, it's really funny because on the broadcast last night, they were like, can you believe this guy's never made an all-star team? And I'm like, yeah, he's not this good in the regular season.
Yeah, he's never good in the regular season.
Jamal Murray. He's a good player. He also is not better than the guys that he's going up against for the all-star game in the regular season every single year. But it's really funny coming out of that game last night. So first off, I said on the broadcast last night, I said during my stream, I can't wait for Lakers Nuggets. I'm really excited for the Lakers to get a big lead and then have the Nuggets come back and win for the 10th straight time. That is, the Lakers were leading in that game in the third or fourth quarter, and the Nuggets came back to win and beat them. The Nuggets against the Lakers are inevitable. I know, look, I feel your pain, LeBron, with the reffing shit. But, well, first off, I have to appease to him because he is a free agent this offseason. And
also, he shouted out the Sixers. He did. I saw he shouted out the Sixers.
He did.
They
worked out with Tyrese Maxey in the offseason. I'm just saying. LeBron, you're always welcome. We could get you an apartment in Fishtown, Rittenhouse Square, anywhere you want to. You want to live in South Jersey? We'll hook you up. Cherry Hill's got some nice spots. I'm just telling you. I feel your pain, but also they have no chance in that series in a way that it just feels so inevitable when you watch. It starts to become like what's the term I'm thinking of here? Where it's like they're seeing into their own future and they start to panic before it even happens. The Lakers are a team that especially when they go up against the Nuggets, they seemingly have their number for two or three quarters, and every single time it's just give the ball to Jokic, you'll get a positive outcome out of that play. And what they were getting away from for large stretches of that game was not giving the ball to Jokic. They were letting Jamal. It's the funny part about that game is that Jamal was self-fulfilling prophecy. There you go. That's the term. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy with the Lakers. They get way up. They're always ahead, and then they get cocky and they start running offense through Torian Prince. and then they fumble a few possessions and, you know, D'Lo gets cold and they start kind of vomiting all over themselves, and then Jokic just takes complete advantage of that. The funny thing is they were running offense through Jamal Murray a ton of that game, and he was largely terrible into the fourth quarter. He pulled a Tatum. Like he had a Tatum game where it was like, man, this guy just does not have it tonight. He looks completely off. What is going on with him? And then in the fourth quarter, I'm not sure he missed a single shot down the stretch of that game.
He didn't. I don't think he did. He had that one on AD was absolutely insane, but the one to like match LeBron with, like, I think it was like a minute 30 to go or something like that, because like Michael Porter Jr. hit one in between there.
Sure.
It was just insane like shot making yet again.
Wait, are you talking about the play where Aaron Gordon saved it from going out of bounds and threw it back perfectly directly into Michael Porter? I was like, once again, this is things that only happen in a Lakers Nuggets series. Like, people were complaining about the Sixers last night, and rightfully so. They've done this so many times where it's just these throwing up all over themselves time and time again. And I was like, the Lakers Nuggets series is literally just designed to tour. Like, at least when the Sixers played the Celtics last year, we got game 1 and 4 and 5. Like, we had some high moments of that, right?
Yeah.
The Lakers can never even get a game for the like, this I was like, they might be able to push them. And then it's just the most competitive sweep again, back to back years.
I'll tell you what happened. Satan came to LeBron James in 2020 and he said, we're going to have Mike Malone. Mike Malone will play Mason Plumlee. But from now on, you can't have. And LeBron said, sign me up. Sign me up. Let Mason Plumlee lose Anthony Davis in game 2. And
I thought you were going to say
they won their title.
I thought what you were going to say was in December of 2019, Bill Gates came to LeBron James and said, listen, LeBron, we have a man-made virus.
Yeah. Look, we're going to try to advance the new world order, the World Economic Forum. We've all been talking about this as part of the Illuminati. LeBron, we need your sign off on this. I know the Lakers are doing really well right now. They're 5th in net rating, which of course always means a championship team, as everyone has told me. The Lakers were really good that year. They were 5th in net rating. That's so good. So they were always going to win that championship. It was not a Bozo freak thing.
So you're still coping, but anyway,
yes.
The Lakers. So they traded their soul for the 2020 bubble championship.
Yeah.
They said, we will do a pandemic because we know that Anthony Davis won't be able to be healthy in April. That's what the Sixers need to do. I figured it out.
Yeah.
We just need another COVID. We need Joel healthy in the bubble like he was during 2019, but with peak Tyrese Maxey and real role players that fit around him. I figured it out. Norovirus, perfect. Come on down. We can make you deadlier. Another bubble?
I'm pretty sure that's what I just had. So
there you go.
We're all in there. I think I just had the norovirus.
Let's go. We figured it out. So we have a new virus is coming through, and then we'll Adam Silver put it in the sphere. In Las Vegas. Done.
Spear. You two, Kevin O'Connor would be ecstatic.
Oh, fuck. Greatest. Wait. No, we can't put it there. James Dolan owns the sphere.
Ah, no.
They'll get the home whistle there again.
No. No.
God damn it. Yeah. Kevin O'Connor. By the way, I learned today that Kevin O'Connor is a deadhead, and I was like, you're not allowed to be in the club, bud. I know Jerry Garcia said that the debt is for everyone, but I'm gonna have to draw the line there. I'm sorry, Kevin O'Connor. You're not allowed in.
That's so weird because that like doesn't it like KOC. I would love to just psychoanalyze him for like a little bit, like Mindhunter. I would love to like put him in the Mindhunter contraption and just like have it like build a profile out of KOC. He is like one of the most fascinating people where he seems like. He seems like he was like a pretty, like relatively speaking, lame, but normal guy. And then like got made fun of on the internet and just kept tripling down in his personality. And it grew on him like the Venom symbiote. Like, and now he's just like, yeah, Elon Musk is cool. The intellectual dark web is actually based. And,
he's basically normie Jordan Peterson.
Yes. Yes. And it's like, how did that like happen to you? Like he really does have like a villain, a villain origin story for a lot of that stuff. But
yeah.
Anyway, no, the Lakers losing is very funny to me. I really enjoy that happened to them. And look, I think what we're finding out here, and people have been saying it, Zach's been saying it, we've said it a couple times on here. I don't think this particular edition of the Nuggets are as good as last year's. They can still absolutely win the championship because last year's Nuggets were by far the best team in the NBA, and they just ran through it, no problem. But I think that there is definitely like there's a window here for my team, several other teams in the West. Like, I don't think that they're as inevitable as they were last year. However,
they play bad. They play bad players. Like, last year, I will say this much. I think they had good. Had a good road. I think they were clearly the best team, and they deserved to win the championship. But they were also not playing bad players.
like
they didn't have. You never saw Justin Holiday. DeAndre Jordan played in game one.
I saw that, series. And it really alarmed me. Yeah,
Reggie Jackson played real minutes in this series. Christian Brown has kind of fell off a cliff a little bit. Like, they were playing guys that were, you know, maybe towards the, like, Jeff Green is being brought up in the comments right now. You know, he's obviously towards the end of his career here, but, like, he at least could give you passable minutes in the playoffs here and there. Bruce Brown was really great for them, and it's just going to require more heavy lifting from their top five, really. Like, they're going to have to play Thibs minutes later in the playoffs. And look, maybe that will work out for them. Like I said, I don't think they're unbeatable, but I think that the way that they have tortured the Lakers it might just mean that they're kind, like, I kind of think they're almost just fucking, like, this is light work to them.
Maybe,
like,
yeah.
Like, whatever. Let's see if we can get down 25 next game.
Can I ask, like, our Nuggets fans friend something? Because I don't watch the Nuggets, like, that often. It's like, but I was kind of shocked watching these playoff games. Like, is it normal for, like, Jokic to go as long as he does on the court without touching the ball? Like, it's really bizarre to me when you have, like, the best player in the world. Not quite the reigning MVP, but, like, one of the best players. Like,
he'll be the MVP this year, third time in 4 years.
Yeah.
MVP last year.
Like, but Will is saying in the comments, every time he's not touching it, the offense looks terrible. And I'm like, you fucking have a one-man offense. Just give him the fucking ball. Like, it's very weird.
And having said that, he still leads the playoffs in touches. But that part of that, I wonder, is to save him for end of games.
Maybe.
Because if you think about all these teams, and especially when they play the Lakers, it's like they know that they have this impossible advantage at the end of games, which is the Jokic Murray two-man game when it's largely centered around Jokic. And one of the things I've said, and you know, credits to Jamal Murray for being able to go doo-doo ass for three quarters and then go 6 of 8 in the fourth quarter and hit the game winner. Yeah. But also, I think that Jokic strikes the fear of God into defenses in the fourth quarter, and it leads to a lot of mental mistakes that ends up with easier offense for Jamal Murray. And we saw a little bit of it, like, obviously not quite as effective, but the Sixers Knicks game last night, they were consistently doubling off of Maxey to go to Joel, and it was leading Maxey wide open, and he got that huge three at the end of the game. And when Murray gets into a rhythm, he's pretty incredible, especially just as a pull-up jump shooter in general. But it's tough. It is tough. It's like, I don't really know what you're supposed to do against this starting five, because like, okay, let's say you put three in that action. Let's say you just decide to leave someone completely open. Well, Aaron Gordon's going to get a wide open dunk, or KCP is going to get a wide open three, or Michael Porter Jr. is going to get a wide open three. Like, their half court offense at the end of games, especially when you're running that two man game, is just so inevitable and so impossible. And it's the reason why everyone keeps picking them to either get to the finals or win the title, because it is probably the most unstoppable action that we've had since, like, you know, Steph and Draymond two man game in the Warriors runs. Like, it is just a play that opens up everything for everyone else, and it becomes just fucking insane. I will say I like the Nuggets' chances in this series to sweep again. I would say, I mean, maybe the Lakers could steal one, but, like, it just feels inevitable that this series turns into a sweep for the second straight year. And I guess we'll get into some other playoff series now, but I have to say, do we want to do any mulligans on our playoff predictions based off of one game? Because I have one major one I want to make.
Okay. I did pretty well outside of Magic Cavs. And yeah, that's the one I'm considering. Yeah, that's the one I'm considering. Did we get any more news on Jalen Suggs? Is he done?
He came back in.
He came back in. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, I was very sick. I just saw that. Like, I was not keeping very good track of that.
Oh, Jalen Suggs toward ACL. You're like having delusions.
I mean, yeah.
By the way, I did just want to shout out to a very funny comment from Billy here, who, when we said that KOC was Normie Jordan Peterson, said, "Clean your Tesla, KOC." Made me laugh.
You gotta clean your Tesla.
But yeah. Cavs magic.
It's such a weird thing because it's like I still do kind of.
Donovan Mitchell's owning you.
Donovan Mitchell is owning me. He's. I mean, we've known he's got this in him. You know that's the look. You run a risk whenever you pick against the team with the best player in the series. I'm. Sure. I don't know. Again, I didn't watch a lot of game two, so I'm doing a lot of box score stuff. But I was really alarmed by how bad Franz was in game one. And that might single-handedly make me swing my pick. So
they just have no guard play. Like it's,
yeah.
I think that I said this before the series on our predictions episode. I said everyone's mad at the Cavs right now for the basketball karma shit. Which, by the way, I do just want to point out that the Lakers didn't duck smoke, and they're getting their teeth kicked in right now.
I mean. The Knicks didn't duck smoke.
Didn't duck smoke, and they're up 2-0. Yes, with help of the refs and the the conspiracy against the Philadelphia 76ers and me personally. But I do think that the Cavs being up 2-0. Look, I mean, if their goal was to win a playoff series, they made the right choice because they were always going to. I mean, look, the Magic might have been able to extend this with some rat ball games, just turning them over a ton and getting out and running and turning this into more of a dogfight. But the issue is, like, Franz and Paolo, like, Franz's shooting regression this year, the lack of guard play with the and Paolo being, you know, his first series where he's really the guy right now. And they just don't, they don't have enough creation. They don't have enough shooting. There's so much lacking on this Magic team in terms of its build. And I don't blame them for not rushing there. Like, I mean, like we said, like who was the best player they could have got at this deadline?
Yeah.
Bojan Bogdanovic probably wouldn't have made a massive difference for them. He might've been somewhat playable, maybe a better version of what Joe Ingles is giving them. Buddy Hield, who has obviously been unplayable for the Sixers. Like there really isn't anything that I think they could
Bojan maybe would have been the
was the one I said first. Yeah.
But there you go.
But like I really don't think that there was anyone that was necessary. I said this before, like I think if they were in the Western Conference, they would have been what OKC was last year. They would have been a frisky play-in team that loses in the play-in, and then next year is when they really take that step forward.
Yeah.
Right now it feels like they're just a year away for me. And
yeah.
The Cavs, even though the Cavs aren't, you know, I probably wouldn't even put them in the top four teams in the East. I'd probably put them fifth. They still have, like you said, best player in the series. Jared Allen is great. Evan Mobley's hitting his threes, which I thought is like, that's like a fucking shotgun blast to the chest if you're playing against him. Because it's like, we take everything else away. You have to give something in the playoffs. When Josh Hart makes 8 threes in the first 2 games, you have to live with that. When Evan Mobley's nailing threes in this series, even though I think he's only made like 4 in the series so far, you just have to live with it. Like you have to take you're going to have to take certain things away from teams, and you're going to have to live with the results of those guys shooting wide open shots. And so far, he's been able to make them pay. I'm a little bit skeptical about the Cavs beyond this round, but I think it's pretty obvious that this team's going to win in 4 or 5 in this series. Like I just think that the Magic are very young. They're very far away, and the Cavs are a much more talented and balanced team than they were last year. Like, it's really funny because if you look at the Cavs and the Suns, they both came out of last year and they said, I said both of those teams needed a transaction cycle more than any team in the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. And the Cavs came out and they said, okay, we're going to go get role players that make sense and fit with our star players. Go get Max Strus, take a swing on George Niang and Sam Merrill, and get shooting around these guys. Hope that Isaac Okoro makes steps. And then next year, we'll come back and we'll be better built for the playoffs. And yeah, they got the easiest matchup probably that they could possibly ask for in the first round. But the Suns went, yeah, we'll take Bradley Beal's bloated contract. The corpse of Nurkic, who on any given night can look good, but also can be completely unplayable. And then, you know, Grayson Allen, great. He had a career shooting year, but then they just completely overpaid to keep him, which I think is one of the biggest mistakes you can do with shooters, generally speaking. So, like, it just shows you that the Cavs front office at least had a plan and an idea of what they wanted to do around this team, whereas the Suns came out of last year and made not all of the wrong decisions, but a lot of bad decisions that kind of have been compacted and piled on top of each other that has led them to their current circumstances, where if you want to talk about that series, that's the mulligan I want to take. The Wolves are going to destroy them. One game I watched and I was like, and look, can the Suns take a game or two? Yeah, they still have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, even though Devin Booker was getting absolutely fucking clamped in that game. They still have guys that, you know, can keep them in a series, but that is the series that alarmed me the most, because not only did they get dominated on the glass, they had absolutely no answer for Anthony Edwards in that. We talked about, like, if we were to rank the best units going into this playoffs.
Yeah.
The Wolves half court defense is probably a top 5 or 6 unit in this playoffs. And I think
it's a top 3, to be honest. They're really fucking good.
Like, I would say the Nuggets half court offense is obviously number 1. Like, in terms of, like, flexibility across matchups, I would say Nuggets half court offense. Yeah, it might be 2. Like, I mean,
yeah.
The Celtics defense might be a little bit more flexible in a playoff setting, but
But it's not as, like, clampy. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Celtics just have a lot of, like, tension. Like, the Celtics just don't have a lot of weaknesses you can pick at. You know what I'm saying? But I don't think it's got as high a floor. As
they're more, like, balanced on each side of the court.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so.
Yeah. Whereas the Wolves' half-court defense is smothering. They basically were like, yeah, Kevin Durant, shoot 11 for 18 and score, like, 30 points. We don't give a fuck. Like, we'll live with that. We're gonna take off everything else from you. If Grayson Allen has a bad shooting game, you're done. If no one can capitalize on these advantages that they even struggle creating, it's gonna be a really long series for the Suns. But I think it's gonna be a short series. Now, look, maybe they win tonight, and I look like an idiot tomorrow when this episode comes out. But I think that the Wolves punch them in the mouth in game one and prove that the regular season matchups really didn't mean shit. And I think that I'm mad at myself for talking myself back into the Suns. I kept saying, don't talk yourself into the Suns. And then I was like, dude, they beat them twice down the stretch of the season. They're 3-0 against them in the regular season. They might have two best offensive players in the series. And Ant proved in game one that he's just as good as those guys. And I think that we need to be having a conversation about Kevin Durant teams in the playoffs, dude. Like, it's just consistent underperforming the last few years. Like, even if he individually is incredible, it's just not translating to a high impact in terms of winning in these last few years as he ages.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, I mean, what, like, it's basically been since he left the Warriors. It's been tough. What has he done in the play? I mean, he did acquit himself that first Nets year when everyone was hurt. I think he had one of the all time, you know, so, but that was still, that's a while ago now, though. That's like 5 years ago now, 4 years ago now, right?
Well, it's been 3 years. I think it's been 4 seasons because this is the 4 season, but I do just want to point out, I think a lot of people made this joke, but it's similar to how Jimmy's been the only player that's benefited from rings culture despite not winning a ring.
Yeah.
Durant is kind of the same way, where it's like, if you put on an I'm him performance and your best two other players are out, it's going to make everyone's image in their mind of you. Like, everyone looks at Kevin Durant differently because he put the team on his back and won that game 5, played the entire game, was amazing. Like, was literally making it so that you know, he was in the conversation for best player in the world for that time period. And I'm not saying that it isn't deserved. What I'm saying is that in terms of what he did there, it was more important to his legacy than what he did with Golden State when he actually won the championship.
Right. Yeah.
Because everyone viewed it as a front running move.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely came out the worst for wear out of that. Like Steph doesn't get any of the dings that KD did, because Steph won two without him. Now those were a little shakier, substantially, but you know, that's part of that Warriors super team thing was what it was, you know? So I don't know. I'm interested to see. I mean, the Suns are totally fucked, especially if they lose this series. We've been over this before on the podcast. Yeah. And I want to rehash it, but like,
sure,
they're in so much trouble. It is very funny that they somehow, they're fucked, but I think pretty much the DeAndre Ayton trade came out in like the top 1% of outcomes, just in terms of what you're getting from Nurkic.
They got Grayson Allen and Nurkic.
Yeah. They got like two really good players for Ayton, who sucks.
I wouldn't say really good, but playable players.
Allen this season has been really good. Like, he has been top like 5% of role players good. So, but
I still am like,
I mean, you know, he's going to be bad. Yeah. You know, he'll be bad again later, yeah. But like
46% he shot from three.
Yeah. And his defense got a lot better after getting like dominated. Bucks fans pissing and moaning about how he got dominated by Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, which, you know, hey, that's kind of what happens. I'm sorry.
Well, it's like, funny, because we compared the Timberwolves to the Marcus Smart era Celtics.
Yeah.
And now it's like, Grayson Allen's, he's playing tonight, by the way. He did get hurt in game one, but he was kind of terrible in game one. And I could really see him struggling in this matchup. And like, it's the Wolves are just, they're so deep with talent that if Ant is just on from a jump shooting perspective in one game, and athletically, there's nothing that he can do with this guy, House. It really is like, I do think that like, special athletes, guys that have like top tier athleticism, top tier touch, top tier speed, top tier whatever, always translate incredibly well to the playoffs. And Ant is the proof that if you just have this balance of size, strength, athleticism, and touch, your game is always going to go up in the playoffs. And like, yes, it's only been one game, but he showed it over the course of a whole series last year. And I do think that like, while we've said we think that Ant is a little bit overrated because of, it's kind of like the Jamal Murray thing a little bit in terms of like the playoffs, they rise up and their game reaches another level. So maybe they get a little bit overrated because the regular season production doesn't quite match that. But like, I'd have a hard time picking 10 guys that I'd rather have than Anthony Edwards in a playoff setting. Like, he's just physically dominating. He's so fucking just, his game is like built for the playoffs.
Yeah. Dwayne Wade just dropped.
It's essentially something like that. Yeah. I mean, it is incredible to watch him do his thing when the shot is falling, because I can imagine they probably feel so helpless, dude.
He's a more ethical Dwayne Wade, because he doesn't like live at the line the same way that Dwayne Wade. He's not as grifting prone.
He's also a better pull-up shooter, is the thing. It's like, the reason why Wade was so amazing was because literally no one could stay in front of him. He was just the craziest fucking athlete. And Ant, one of the things that I've talked about with, like, we've talked a lot about it with De'Aaron Fox, and I talked about it with Maxi too, but like, Maxi, De'Aaron Fox, Anthony Edwards, they're almost so unstoppable when they get going and they get downhill and they're able to get into the paint and just get all that shit, that you get frustrated when they settle for jumpers, even though they can go on stretches where they're incredible jump shooters. Where, like, you know, Maxi shot 5 for 10 from three last night or whatever it is. And, you know, Anthony Edwards has random games where it's just like, man, he catches a heater and he can score 12 points in 5 minutes off of these jumpers. But, like, it's one of those things where it's like, there's really no counter to that, except you just got to try to make him into a playmaker. And, like, even there, he's improved over time. He's not a great playmaker. I don't think that him or Maxi are great playmakers right now, but they do just enough. And that's just like, when you're an unstoppable scorer, you need to just have like a passable level of playmaking, even in a playoff setting, to kind of, you know, control a defense. And man, the Suns defense is like, They just don't. They don't have the size. They don't have the perimeter stoppers. They don't really like Nurkic. Nurkic does as much as he possibly can with his physical limitations, but it's just, it's not enough. Like they just don't have any sort of answer for whatever Minnesota's going to bring them. Like they're Minnesota's massive and skilled, and they'll beat you on the boards. They'll defend better than you, and they'll scrape by enough on offense to beat you over the course of a series. And that's the only mulligan out of all. Like even with the Mavs laying an egg, I was like, I'll that will be fine. Even with the Pacers Bucks, like Dame scored 35 points in the first half of that fucking game. If he does that for a whole series, hats off to you. Great. I'm a little bit worried about the Pacers for sure, but I wouldn't be shocked if the Pacers come back in that series. I wouldn't be shocked if the Mavs come back in the Clipper series. I would be shocked if the Suns come back in the Wolves series after that first game.
Yeah. That's the one I have the most stake in of any series that doesn't directly have one of my teams in it. Cause I would really like to see Nuggets Wolves for no personal reasons whatsoever. I would like to see Denver play the team they have the hardest time with.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to take the better team, and you got to trust that the team that has the one unit that has been elite throughout the course of the regular season, mm-hmm. like you've said it before, defense generally translates better to the playoffs than offense does in terms of portability. Like it's not to say that like the peak Warriors offense didn't translate to the playoffs or the Nuggets half court offense doesn't translate to the playoffs. It's to say that, generally speaking, if you have a top five defense in the regular season, it almost always translates to the playoffs outside of those Jazz Rudy Gobert teams. And I even think their defenses were passable. I just think that they weren't quite as elite. And this is the first time that Rudy's really had legit perimeter defenders. If you add that to his insane rebounding and rim protection, it's going to be tough to beat them. Even in a game where the Suns might feel like they have the talent advantage because of their shot creators. Like, I just don't really think that it will really matter over the course of this series. So
it's so funny that they like the Gobert trade is still a bad trade, by the way, but it's insane that it's worked out this way. It's like,
I saw someone lay it out and they were like, the only reason you should feel good about it from a Jazz perspective right now is because of the turmoil with the Timberwolves ownership.
Yeah.
Where like maybe they just have to make cost cutting moves. Yeah. And if they're not able to get off Cat easily, which I think would be because you have the Cat replacement in Naz Reid, even though Cat might end up being important to them at some point in this playoff run.
He gives them a higher ceiling. He also gives them a lower floor, but he gives them a higher ceiling. Like if you have championship aspirations, you probably are going to need to keep Cat.
Yeah, and if that is the case, you know, look, an aging Rudy Gobert, Anthony Edwards, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Jaden McDaniels, that's great. But if you have no draft picks coming down the pipeline, it is tough to make that a sustainable winner. Honestly, I should throw Naz Reid in there because he's only 23, 24. He's young. So they do have a nice young core around Ant, and if they're able to keep Kat somehow, I would feel worse about those draft picks if I'm the Jazz, but you just got to hope that one of these years, but I mean, I don't want to overreact too much because I did this last year with Devin Booker, but like Ann is 22 years old. And right now, like I said, I don't know if there's 10 guys I'd take over him in the playoffs. And if that's the case, what's to stop him from being a top 5 or 6 player a few years from now, even in the regular season? And then if you're looking at that trade, you go, well, we have a top 5 or 6 player. It's the point that Bontemps keeps bringing up. He's like, when the Cavs and the Wolves made those trades with the Jazz guys, they made a bet that their guys were going to grow into superstars, Evan Mobley and Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards is very obviously growing into a superstar. And Evan Mobley, while he's still a really good player, is not growing into that. And if I'm looking at it from the Jazz perspective, I'm probably feeling a little bit better, especially with Donovan Mitchell potentially wanting out, about those Cavs picks than I am about those Wolves picks.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Especially just because the thing that really screws the Cavs over is that there's the looming threat of Donovan Mitchell like immediately leaving. And the thing about Donovan Mitchell leaving is he's clearly their best player. So
by far. I mean, yeah, I like Jared Allen a lot as a complimentary guy, but like Darius Garland, no. Evan Mobley could eventually get to the point where if the defense is good enough that he could be that defensive one, offensive two or three, that might have a similar level of impact. But yeah, in terms of floor raising, Donovan Mitchell's by far their best player. Like, I don't even think it's close. Also, we have to answer this. It's a great question. SGA or Ant? Plant your flag now.
Ant.
I'm going with Ant too.
Yeah.
I trust him more in the playoffs. Like, I think that SGA is going to be a top five regular season player.
Yes.
I think there are defenders that he's going to struggle with in the playoffs.
Yes.
And I think that we've seen that with this Pelicans matchup, that he is going to be a guy that when Herb Jones and these longer, bigger defenders are on him in a playoff matchup are going to give him issues in a way that, I think that Ant's biggest problem is that he beats himself sometimes. Problem is that he just is like, I'm the fucking man and I'm going to take over this game. And he can kind of go insane and go like 6 for 24 or whatever. Whereas SGA has just a bit more of physical limitations in terms of creating one versus one against set defenses. And I think if a team game plans, it's a little bit easier to stop a guy like SGA, despite being an elite mid-range shooter, despite being a, you know, a crazy flexible athlete, as opposed to just like a fucking bullet train force with Anthony Edwards.
And charisma too. I don't know. People talk about aura. Like, Ant has aura too. Like, which I genuinely think is like, you can't underestimate that in like, you know, there's different types of aura. You've got Jokic's I don't give a fuck aura. You've got, you've got Giannis's sex maniac aura. There's all sorts of different auras you can have as a player.
You have Joel Embiid's I hate the French aura.
Yeah, there you go. So there's all sorts of different auras. Ant just is cool. Like, I'm sorry. Like, Ant rocks. And SGA, I don't know. Like, it seems like this whole season has been, and it's hard because I've been a huge SGA guy going back like 5 years. We both have, like, on this podcast, like when he was like,
I used to be annoyed by when nerds talked about him early. I was like, okay, like after his rookie year, I was like, shut up. And then he just owned me and I was like, oh no, this guy rules.
Yeah. And now he's good, but like, I think the SGA stuff has gotten like a little bit out of hand. He had a great season last year. He definitely should have gotten MVP votes. Mm-hmm. Should get all that stuff. But I think we've got to understand the context and the difference between the regular season and the playoffs. And I think we're going to see it.
Maybe it's not 3 years younger. I think people forget that because SGA.
Yeah.
Because honestly, because he was being held back by his team context, and now he might be a little bit lifted up by his team context with their system and their spacing and all of the creative ball handling and plays that they run and all that shit. But, you know, the guard screening for each other. Minnesota is, I'm not saying that they don't have a creative offense, but it's kind of like check ball. Check rock, roll it out. And like if that is the setting, Anthony Edwards, like I said, physically and athletically, he's going to only get better over the course of time. And I think by the time that he's 25 years old, it's going to be pretty undeniable that Ant is that dude. And while SGA is amazing, I think that he's pretty close to where he's going to be as a player. Like, this is about the highest level outcome I would expect for him. He's entering his prime right now. So,
and that's awesome. He's going to be a top 10 player in this league for a pretty good amount of time, I think.
Like, he's great,
especially in the regular season. So like, that's awesome. Like,
That Ant is just like a generational athlete, though. Like, I don't know if he's a generational basketball player, because I think that term's thrown around way too loosely. But in terms of athleticism, he's like, he's probably the best young athlete prospect we've seen since Giannis.
I'm gonna piss Celtics fans off a little bit here. Yeah, to like put the thing, he's got the same problem. SGA is the same problem Tatum does to me, where it's like you're not quite good enough, I don't think, to be the best player on a championship team in the playoffs. I don't think.
The Celtics could win the title this year and easily flip.
Well, they could
so perfectly around those guys.
That's and the OKC thing.
He has more moves to make.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's like a very similar thing. Like whereas like Ant, I think Ant could. I could very easily see Ant being the best player on a championship team in the next like 5 years, like without it being like perfect around him. Like Rudy Gobert is a good teammate for Ant. He's not like a perfect teammate for Ant. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there's some different things there. So I don't know. I have a lot of stock in Ant. I think last year's playoffs kind of chased some people off the Ant corner because he kind of struggled a little bit. And I think people forgot he's really fucking young. Like, you know, so it is what it is. But
no, he's incredible. He's going to continue to prove his worth as these playoffs go on. I think that the other series, the Mavericks should be embarrassed. Lay an egg like that. Like,
I don't want to say I told you so. I didn't want to say I told you so, but Uno has responded.
Game Uno. Well, here's the thing. I've been saying this about Dame. I've been saying this about KD. I've been saying this about Harden. To a lesser extent, Paul George. These all-time players, you give them a week off, they're going to come back looking like a prime version of themselves.
Yeah.
That's what happens every time. They're a little bit burstier, the shot's falling, they get into a rhythm, and Dame and Harden, when they're on, are two of the best hot hand scorers of all time. Like, if the shot is falling, holy shit, watch out, they can take over a game. No one's ever denied that. They're incredible. But over the course of a series, in the course of a season, their bodies wear down, especially with playoff minutes, especially with playoff intensity, playoff defenses. Luckily for them, they get to face against the Mavericks and the Pacers in the first round, which is a nice warm-up for what they're going to face later in the playoffs if they advance through this round. Like I said, I still think that the Mavs laying an egg is more of an aberration, although they were just like feeding Zoo on the block, and he was just kind of bodying. I was like, this is like 90s basketball right now.
Yeah,
with Harden and PG on the court.
I was like trying to watch that one at the gym. Like they wouldn't change. I asked the gym to change the Fox News because like all the like treadmills are like on the one half of the gym. All the like the treadmills and the recumbent bikes and stuff are on like the news side, and the sports side is all like the weightlifting shit that I don't do, obviously. But they wouldn't change the Fox News game, so I had to like kind of like look over in the corner, and I was like, what. What is happening? Because I just kept like peeking over, and it was like a 30-point game. The Mavericks had like what, 30-something points at halftime?
Their offense was pathetic in the first half. Like, honestly, it was really not until Kyrie kind of got going in that third quarter that they had any sort of sustainable offense. I was, like Bill said, I was shocked by how Luka looked in this game. They scored 8 points in the second quarter, Sam.
That's awesome. That's so good.
They scored 31, I think, in the first half. They were like Luka was not able to, he was just getting targeted over and over on defense. They were trying to make him tired, get him worn down, and they were just out physicaling them. And then, the Clippers shot like crazy too in that first game too. Like Harden isn't going to make every fucking jumper. Terrence Mann isn't going to shoot like that every single game. Even Russ had a three at one point. Like, that's not going to happen throughout the course of a series. But with the boogeyman, Kawhi, right around the corner, potentially returning in this series, if that does happen, you needed to win game one, or you at least needed to compete a little bit better than they did in game one to make me feel confident about them being able to beat them if Kawhi can come back. And here's the thing. I've seen this before in series where Joel comes back in the middle of a series. And it's not that Joel or Kawhi or whoever the star is that comes back needs to be 100%. They just need to be effective enough to be a decoy and open things up for everyone else, because teams will just automatically game plan for that guy. And if they game plan for that guy, it's going to make Paul George's and James Harden's life a lot easier in this game. And I think that honestly, like, credit to the Clippers. They were honestly, they were the better team at stretches for the point of this season. I thought the Mavs finished strong and that would carry over, but I was just really disappointed by Luka in this game one. And I think that he's got to be the one that turns it around, because defensively he was pathetic. Offensively, he couldn't get anything going. As Bill said, he looked doughy.
He does. I mean, hey, tell Billy.
I'm not fat shaming. Yeah, yeah. He looks a little doughy.
Yeah, he looks a little doughy. Yeah.
And I don't. He's the guy that I want to see. Just, I mean, like, just come out and prove that you're that dude, because we know he is. And when he gets going early in these games, he's pretty much he can play at a 1A level, unlike very few players in terms of an offensive playoff talent. It's pretty much him and Jokic when they're at their highest levels, I think. And I would just like to see, throughout the course of the rest of this series, where they're able to, you know, like in the past, they've been able to target the Clippers' weak perimeter defenders. They've been able to get Zubac on a lot of switches. I would like to see that in this game and not have Luka settling for so many mid-range jumpers and apply a little bit more rim pressure in between, in between these things. Oh, here we go. Skip Bayless. Skip Bayless was right. Kawhi will make his playoff debut in game two. Skip Bayless is always right. Does he have a direct line to Kawhi, dude?
I think he does. No, I think he does have a direct look. Like, I thought that was like known. Maybe I'm making that up though.
No, I think it might be Uncle Dennis. Yeah. It might be. Maybe Skip is hooked up with Uncle Dennis, because he predicted a week ago, he said Kawhi won't play game one, he'll play game two. They stole game one. Game two might even be a warm-up game for Kawhi, but
yeah,
I'm feeling, look, I still think the Mavericks can win this series. I'm feeling a lot better about the Clippers' chances, though, in general, coming out of that. Stealing game one, having Kawhi come back. Things are falling into place for the Clippers to make it to the conference finals.
That's true. They've got to win this series, though. They've got to win this series. Sure. Yeah,
I would say that, yes. Obviously.
But I'm just saying, like, it would be very Clippers to, like, look past just because you won game one without Kawhi. The wheels can come off for the Clippers in a hurry. They are one of these franchises that this stuff happens. And there is no... I don't care that he ate shit in game one. Luka is like the number one opposing star you do not want to do that against.
He's gone down 0-2 twice in his career and forced a game seven both times, I think.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's still like it's zombie shit where you just got to shoot them in the head and make sure that they are dead before you leave. Because... Like they forced game seven they went up 2-0 in 2021. But they went down 0-2 to the Suns, I believe, and then they came back and won that series. So absolutely, and maybe Luka, but I kind of think Luka looked out of shape in that game. Like, they had a week off in between. And like I said, all the old dudes who benefit from having that week off, guys that kind of don't take shit seriously, sometimes can get out of shape over the course of the week. And then I don't know. Like, Luka's got to do something in game two, because that series, the rope can really fucking get away from you quickly in that.
Look, Harden still, the Harden pendulum swing is going to come at some point.
Yes.
You know, he had that great game one. He dedicated it to Kylie. We all saw it. this next game though, there's going to be some stinkers, coming up here. Like, from him. In. Kawhi is going to happen. I still think it's a long series. I picked the Clippers in seven before this. I still feel like it's Clippers in seven. I think it's good that the Clippers won one of these home games, because I think if they were going on the road 0-2, they'd be dead.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we will see. I expect the Mavs to hit back at least a little bit here. But I just don't trust – these are two teams that are total opposites just in terms – this is kind of – I know that, like, the Clippers have beat the Mavericks before, but this has the feeling of, like, Lakers-Nuggets to me, where it's like, if you stop taking the Mavericks seriously as an opponent, it can, like, it could really backfire. Like, that's what will lose the Clippers this series, because the Clippers are one of these teams that kind of gets high on their own supply and is like, oh, we're a championship team, we don't have to do, like, all this whack shit.
They don't put in the work.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I'll believe that series is over when it's over. I think that series is going seven, kind of no matter what. So, but we'll see.
Okay. So, just last thoughts on Clippers Mavs. Yeah. I think that the thing about this series and the thing that I might have overlooked in terms of, like, I still feel fine about the Pacers and the Mavericks' chances of coming back, even if it's obviously going to be an uphill battle. The one thing that I talked about with the Clippers is, like, they really lack interior size, and they lack, like, just general, you know, size in terms of rebounding and on the wings, because Kawhi and Paul George haven't really given a shit in the regular season, especially on the defensive end. If they ratchet up that intensity a little bit in these next few games, and the Clippers clearly have the interior size advantage on the Mavericks, because I think Zubac exposed how small Gafford is and how inexperienced and kind of weak in comparison to him Lively is, that I do think that this might be a matchup that's more favorable to the Clippers than I gave credit for in the first place. So yeah, you'll have a random game where Russ tries to take over and it goes terribly, and you'll probably have a stinker Harden game and whatever, but Clippers got to be feeling pretty good after that first game to win that without Kawhi and have a legit shot in this series, when I felt like they were going to be dead on arrival. I kind of was like, this is over. Like, this team's waiting to mail it in, like they have in the past, like you said. Mm-hmm. But I could definitely see them easily winning that. So,
can I read you something real quick? This is a quote from Joe Mazzulla about the Celtics being shut out on NBA regular season awards. I think it's beautiful. Why would you get an award for the past? So
Joe Mazzulla, he's got eyes on the prize. He's locked in.
Well, I'm a little confused as to what Joe Mazzulla thinks awards are for. Does he think it's for events that are coming in the future? You only get awards literally in the moment. He's awesome.
He's a bet on yourself guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is like the ultimate. He really is that guy that I have manipulated time and broken my day into four different 6-hour days. Like, that is Joe Mazzulla, like actual Joe Mazzulla. He's such a psycho, dude. I love him. Yeah. I'm glad he's like turned himself into like a good coach this year, because now it's a lot more funny to me when he just is an insane person like this. So
Joe Mazzulla needs to be investigated and banned for life from the NBA, just like Jonte Porter is what I'm trying to say here, for himself. And only looking forward to things in the future and trying to guess what will happen.
Yeah, so he's gambling addiction. Not yet realized.
So question for you. During Celtics Heat game one, when they had the fake comeback, did you get nervous at all?
Yeah. No, I got pretty nervous. But here's what I will say about that. Part of the reason I like the Celtics' chances is because of exactly what happened. The Celtics were up 30. They were not up 20. If the Celtics were up 20, like they would have been in previous iterations, it would have been a one possession game and things go off the rails.
Sure.
The Celtics were up 30 because the talent difference is just that massive. You've got Sam Hauser and Peyton Pritchard hitting 6 threes off the bench, and that effectively ends the game. So even when the Heat do catch a little bit of, you know, devil magic, the Celtics let go diaper mode.
Everyone knows in the comments that Sam only gave credit to the two white players that come off the bench. Continue.
I think those are the only two players that came off the bench.
They only played a 7-man rotation in that game?
Al Horford. No, Al Horford. Never mind. They did play. I use an honorary starter. That
you would forget the one non-white guy.
Yeah. Honorary starter. You know, it's nervous. You know what I'm saying? The diaper mode's still in there. Celtics fans were saying, oh, they just let their, you know, they let the, you know, it's because they were up 30. And it's like, okay, well, you're up 30 against the bane of your existence in a game one playoff game. That's pretty motivating in my opinion. I think it's still in there, but I just think the Celtics again are so talented that it's not going to matter until the finals. And they're going to need to, when they play like a really good team, maybe if the Bucks get their shit together. I'm not holding my breath for that. Maybe if the Bucks get their shit together at the conference finals, but
they could definitely call. And like I said, the Knicks have caught a little bit of the devil magic. I wouldn't count them fully out, even though I would still take the Celtics in that series. So how good did it feel when Tyler Hero shit his pants in this game? I can tell you that play-in game felt pretty good.
He's it's awesome how like bad he is. I mean, I gotta kind of admit, Jaime Jaquez was probably their best player like in that game, good. Straight up. Like,
yeah,
he might be like a real fucking guy. I mean, I don't know. We've yet to see if he's like a Devil Magic one off guy, like, you know, Duncan Robinson or Caleb Martin or some of these other guys who've carried in the other. He might be like a real fucking player, though. He was really fucking good in that game. So, I that was probably my biggest takeaway. I'm sticking to, as insane as it sounds, I really don't think Jimmy Butler would help them very much in this series. No. I'm going to be totally honest. Jimmy Butler is like, he's like Tyler Hero, but like half of that, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's not quite as bad. He'll get steals, which is like, that's like a pretty big positive play. Like, Jimmy Butler will get like two or three steals a game that lead to runouts that are pretty big swing plays. But like, go back and look at like Jimmy Butler against the Boston Celtics. He does not have, it's like a made up thing. He has manipulated the media. He's done well in other postseason series, but Jimmy Butler is a member of the Miami Heat. He did really well in the Chicago series as a member of the Miami Heat. He has not been good against the Boston Celtics in the playoffs. I'm not sure he would help them that much. They played a pretty well connected game. I thought the Heat actually played pretty well, despite the fact that they got stomped in by 20. I think a lot of that actually had to do with the Celtics shooting the fucking cover off the ball more than anything else. I think they got varianced a little. They actually played pretty well, I thought. And like,
part of that was the plan from Miami, which was just sending hard doubles at Jason Tatum and just wide open threes were being created over and over. Like, Tatum had 10 assists in that game, I think, and honestly probably had more hockey assists. Everyone was kind of getting on Tatum after that game because of because his shooting splits weren't great. And I was like, honestly, he just made the right play. I've seen this happen so many times with Joel in the playoffs where I'm like, yeah, at the end of the game, you might shoot like 6 for 15 or whatever, but they have like a 140 offensive rating whenever he's on the court. Because if you're just sending hard doubles and you're just making the easy pass and it's leading to open threes, you'll take it. Like, it's really not. I thought that Tatum played, even though the shot wasn't falling for him, I felt like Tatum played the correct game given Miami's game plan in this game. Jaylen had a few moments where he went a little bit off the rails, but overall the Heat this year, he should be over in four. I mean, maybe Spo cooks up an insane game plan in one of these games and they get an insane shooting game. Did Caleb Martin make a shot in this game? It felt like so. he was terrible in this game. I mean, the Celtics are way more talented. The Celtics have every advantage in this series, and if it even goes five, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, DeLon Wright, like, if in a closer series, DeLon Wright, you know, if they won this game, the DeLon Wright for 5 for 5 would make me.
If they had max contract, grind set Kelly Oubre, aka Jimmy Butler, in this series, DeLon Wright might make a little bit more of a difference, but I don't think that he's going to be swinging this series. But I do agree with you. Jaime Jaquez really impressed me in that game. And honestly, yeah, DeLon Wright is good. Like,
I'm kind of
surprised Spo waited so long to play. He was playing Patty Mills over him. Like, I don't know. I think that DeLon Wright probably should have been higher in their pecking order throughout the course of this series season since they got him.
I'm kind of surprised at how they got DeLon Wright. I was like, oh, when did they trade for him?
And it was
like, no, they got him on a buyout. And I was like, what? Like, he's like genuinely pretty good. I don't know. Like, it seems weird. Who bought him out? The Wizards?
The Wizards bought him out. I wanted to trade for him at the deadline. But yeah, I don't know. I think DeLon Wright's good. I think that he should get a nice, like a mini MLE deal in free agency. Yeah. But
he might win a game here. I said Celtics sweep. It might be Celtics in five. They've been pretty. Honestly, the Heat impressed me quite a bit. They played.
They're frisky.
They were getting the doors blown off them, and they still. And Tyler Hero was like actively shitting himself on the floor, like Paul Pierce, in the Garden. Like, so, you know, the fact that they didn't quit on that is like enough to be like at least raise some of my PTSD. But, you know, again, as Brian says, though, like, it was a really impressive performance where they lost by 20. So, at the end of the day, that really is what happened. Yeah.
So, how insane do you think Bulls fans are driving themselves right now? I don't think Bulls fans cared about getting into the playoffs.
Yeah.
But I do think that they've got to be going insane that Tyler Hero was dog shit against the Sixers in the play-in, dog shit against the Celtics in game one, and then absolutely owned them in that second play-in game.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be losing my fucking mind if I were them right now. It would just be,
Maybe even
when they don't get away with it, they still have to like remind teams like the Bulls, like we're still ahead of you.
We lost
our best player or two of our best players.
I'll walk back some of what I said because Jimmy's value is that Tyler, you don't have to play Tyler Hero as much if Jimmy Butler's on the floor. So that's where
no Terry Rozier, like they.
Yeah.
It's the same problem that I keep talking about with the Sixers. It's not that Campaign is good. Campaign sucks 80% of the time. He can dribble a basketball. He has a skill set that very few players on the Sixers have. And that's the Tyler Hero. Like the only reason Tyler Hero has to play for the Heat is because he's one of two players on that team that can realistically create offense, even if it's bad offense. Him and Jaime Jaquez are really the only ones you could just throw the rock to and expect them to create their own shot out of it. And like occasionally Bam will have a game where the jumper's falling and he looks like that. But in general, they clearly don't really trust Bam to be a hub in the same way that they do with some of the perimeter guys. So
we'll see. We'll see.
He hit a three in that game, by the way.
Bam. Yeah, he did. Yep. We'll see. Right now, the Sam panic meter is, we're at like two. I still feel pretty good. You know, if you want to check in with me later this week, you know, we might be creeping up to a six or something if something goes wrong. But for now, I maintain that the Celtics should sweep maybe five. I'm maintaining that. So
let's go. We'll see. All right. Predictions for tonight's games. We have Timberwolves, Suns, Pacers, Bucks, and Mavs, Clippers.
Let's go Timberwolves. Still no Giannis, right?
Still no Giannis. No, I think Giannis is going to be out for this series.
Oh, wow. Really? It's that long? Maybe
halfway through the series he comes back, but there haven't really, he's been working out, but like I said, these cap things can be 3, 4, sometimes 5 weeks.
All right. I'll say, I'm definitely Wolves for sure. That's definitely one. I'm going to say Milwaukee does it again. I'm going to say Milwaukee goes up 2-0, and I'm going to say Dallas evens the series tonight. So
even without, let's just last thing on the Pacers Bucks because we didn't talk about that at all.
Yeah.
Even without Giannis, it is shocking how many more offensive creators and guys you feel like you can trust on Milwaukee. And the thing that I thought was going to be the tactical advantage that the Pacers had was, oh, well, Tyrese Halliburton has absolutely gone off on the Bucks every time they played this year. The large majority of those games were earlier in the season. And I don't know if it's the hamstring. I don't know if it's, you know, the shock of playing in the playoffs for the first time, or if it's just he's going to be a playoff dropper. But Tyrese Halliburton, the way that he was playing in that game, I said it on Twitter, it was like he was playing like a washed veteran point guard. Like he was driving to the basket and immediately looking to kick somewhere. He wasn't looking to be aggressive as a scorer. I think it's something we've talked about with him where it's like he might struggle in isolation in the playoffs. He might struggle to generate his own offense in the playoffs. And I think they need to have a much better game plan to get him involved as a scorer because Pascal Siakam's a good player. He ain't winning you a playoff series if he's your leading scorer in this. So you can't have a wash Chris Paul, Kyle Lowry stat line from Halliburton if you want to win this game, if you want to win this series. He needs to step it up. And honestly, all their role players, Ben Shepherd was not very good in this game. Aaron Nesmith. It was the first playoff game for so many guys. TJ McConnell, they just completely left him wide open from three. They really need to figure out a way to make some of these dudes playable because it gets ugly quick, especially if Halliburton isn't just taking over the game with jump shooting like he was earlier in the season. So at least they can sleep easy at night knowing that Buddy Hield would have also shit his pants.
Didn't really hurt them that bad. Is Halliburton still hurt? Like,
I honestly don't know. He looks fine now. Like, he looks okay to me. But I'm also like, I'm also like, he kind of played into their hands in the first game. Like they wanted to, they wanted to make him make passes and have them, you know, have the other guys on the team beat him. And like, that's just something that I feel like can't happen when you're going up against the Bucks perimeter defense.
Yeah.
Like even if it's better with a level of intensity and like maybe Pat Bev gives them a little bit of toughness or whatever, they should not be getting run off the court by the Bucks in this series. But yeah, Zyklor says he doesn't have the same burst. That's been the main thing that people have been saying since he got the hamstring injury, is that the burst just hasn't been quite the same. It might be a little bit tougher for him to get that first step off.
Yeah. So, got the money though. Bag secured.
Got his bag. And also I think that I think he'll have a random hot shooting game that will get him going in this series, or at least I hope so I wanted that series to go long just because I think it's an interesting matchup. But I'll take Timberwolves again tonight at home. I'm loosey with the football right now. I'm gonna take the Pacers to steal this one against the Bucks tonight. And then if Kawhi's coming back, I think the Clippers might go up 2-0.
Wow.
We'll see.
It would be very, very on brand for us for the Suns to win tonight.
It would be very on brand for us for me to get all of these wrong, because I think I got basically every team I picked except for the obvious ones, and then the Cavs lost the first game.
Yeah, I was going to say the Cavs were the ones where I ate shit. I'm still the Magic. I'm still kind of, Maxi won MIP. Let's go.
Most improved, baby. Let's go.
So
take
improved.
That Kobe White.
Thank you, Kendrick Perkins.
yes, Kendrick Perkins, friends of the UNOBALL podcast. Yeah. I'm very happy for Maxie. I'm happy for him because after last night, we need a fucking boost.
A win.
We need a win, something. Baby. I'm leaving here with something. Let's
Denzel,
go.
Denzel. Yeah.
Next year, by the way, we can now address it. Next year, we can now that Maxie has officially won Most Improved, we can revisit this award in a year and talk about why it needs to be changed to award guys like Kobe White. But for now,
it's fine. It's good.
Got it.
It's good. One more thing. I still don't know, like, because we were saying, I never made my decision about my mulligan if I wanted to. Did we make any official mulligans?
My one mulligan I'm taking is Wolves Suns. Oh,
okay.
I'm taking
you're switching to Wolves. Okay.
Yeah. I'll stay with my other picks even if I don't feel great about the Pacers and Clippers.
I'm really on the fence about Cavs Magic because, like, I'm still like.
Oh, dude, the Cavs are winning that series. Come on.
The Magic, that's what I'm saying. Like, it looks like the Cavs are running them out of the gym every night, but then I just keep, like, looking back to, like the Magic are, like, they're shooting bad and they're shooting like horrendous. Like they shot like 23 and 27% from three in the first two games. Not even 30, not even 30.
They're a bad shooting team though. Like, is it?
I get it.
Shooting gets harder in the playoffs because
I get it. But like they were like a 33% shooting team. So they should be like a 30% shooting team and they're a 25% shooting team. I don't know. I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm not going to take my Magic audible.
Also, Will say it in the comments. Sam, admit you were wrong. It won't kill you. One time.
No.
Nope. I'm going down with the Magic ship.
I'm going down with the Magic ship.
I'm going down on the DeVos
yacht. Franz has a plan for me.
DeVos family yacht, baby.
We left Fraud Wagner in Ohio. Franz is coming to play in Florida.
Are we sure he's the best Wagner brother?
I'm not. They need to play Mo more.
Mo fucking cooked the Sixers a few weeks ago, and I was like, where did this come from?
Mo's kind of always cooked the Celtics too. I've always like kind of like he played for the Celtics, and I think he's like got superpowers on the Magic. Like he's been pretty. He's a good playoff player because he's kind of instigatory, you know what I'm saying? And like he's like not scared.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like you need a guy like that. So
I mean, just generally speaking, you know, MAGA guys aren't afraid of the moment. So
Will said the Axis Towers of Franz and Paula. You need to trade for Rui.
I know. There you go. Get Rui.
Let's go.
Oh my god.
That'd be awesome.
All right. Will, I hope you're riding high over No Dunks talking about your Tobias Harris tweet. If you guys missed it, mm-hmm. Will had a tweet about how many Tobias Harrises there are in the world and in this league of ours, and it was really funny. But yeah, let's wrap it up for tonight. I'm sure everything we talked about will be irrelevant the next time we record. So see you later this week. If you want access to that episode, sign up for the Uniball Patreon. We will be recording on Thursday or Friday, probably Friday of this week. Also, you can get access to all of the streams that we record on Playback. You can see my soul leave my body from that stream the other night. And you can get access to the Uniball Discord, which is apparently in civil war after the Sixers lost last night. We were getting trolled by the non-Sixers fans in there, but we will stay strong. Yep. Go Sixers. I'm going to die soon. All right. Bye.
Peace.